Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us on another edition of Catching Up with Simo and Shep. Are the Tigers calming your fears? The Tigers legend needs to retire, and the first female umpire calling balls and strike. We get Simo's thoughts on that on the next edition of Catching Up with Simo and Shep. Next. What's going on, everybody? Hope you had a great week. My friend is here, Craig Monroe. Did you have a good week?
I had a pretty good week. Good. How about yourself?
Not bad. Not bad. We're going to get into the movie theme because we're brought to you by Imagine. We always ask the movie question, the best of, the worst of, your thoughts. We'll do that a little bit later on in this episode. But first and foremost, the Tigers are starting to play a little bit better brand of baseball. Do you think they're calming people's fears?
Well, I think getting Kerry Carpenter back has calmed their fears.
Yeah.
Well, when he's healthy. I mean, he impacts the game. Here's a guy that's got over 300 at-bats. He's got 21 bombs, and they're big ones, and they're in big moments. So I think that's the shot in the arm that this offense needed.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the trade deadline, you and I both talked about getting a starting pitcher, helping the back end of the bullpen, perhaps a right-handed stick. He's obviously not a right-handed batter, but the power is legit for the middle of the lineup, and it seems like it changes everybody's approach.
Well, with Riley Green not swinging the bat as well as we've seen him swing the bat, because he normally carries his team.
Yeah.
He's struggling. He's scuffing a little bit here. He's starting to get going a little bit, though, but you can't put all that pressure on him with Riley and Torkelson. You need somebody else to step up, and having Carpenter back, I feel like he's definitely going to take some of that pressure off.
Yeah, I want to talk about Riley Green and the focus on the strikeouts for him so much so far this year. But sticking with Kerry Carpenter, the big question has always been, is he an everyday player? Because he wasn't playing against lefties. He wasn't successful against lefties. Not that he is right now, about 2.25, but he is better this year against southpaws than he was in the past.
Well, I think you got to play him against lefties. The more he sees him, I think the better his approach will get, the better he'll be. But when you don't see a lot of left-handers, man, good luck. I mean, it's tough trying to keep that front shoulder in for some of those left-handed hitters when they're facing a guy with this arm slot, that's a ball coming from behind you. I know righties do it every day. Because you face more righties, right-handed pitchers in the big leagues.
Yeah, why don't we focus on that? Why do we always focus on lefty on lefty and not righty on righty?
I have no idea why, and it's always been that way in the game. Righty on righty, it's 85% in the big leagues. There's only 15% lefty. That's probably why lefties don't see too many lefties, and you're just going to see a ton of righties. So that's an interesting question, though. Why don't we do
but
that?
But did you ever ask any of your managers why that was always the case? I mean, how did you do against lefties compared to righties?
I absolutely destroyed left-handers, and I think it was because the ball was coming into me. It's a little difficult when that ball is running away from you. I know they've got the two-seam fastball where they can run the two-seam in. They'll just back you up a little bit off the plate, and then it's slider away, fastball away. And it's just tough. You have to really focus on keeping that front shoulder in, and when you're not able to do it, good luck. You're going to struggle.
You know, it's interesting. 13 of the Tigers' next 19 games at the time of our episode are going to be on the road. At the time of this episode, they and the Brewers have the most home wins in baseball. But Kerry Carpenter, a guy we're talking about, much better at home than he is on the road. Why do you think that is? Does that get into players?
It's all psyche. But there's also different backdrops where guys just happen to see the ball better.
You mean the batter's eye?
Batter's eye, yeah. Batter's eye. The guys just see the ball better. For whatever reason, they can pick up the release point better, the location. I mean, where they letting the ball go from. It's dark back there, so that thing looks, you got a white ball coming out of that hand. It opens up. I was that kind of hitter at home at Comerica Park that, because it's so spacious and we know that it's big, I at times would get big with my swing. But say you go to a band box, like you go to a Comiskey Park at the time or a U.S. Cellular at the time, you knew you was going to get rewarded if you just stay short and make good contact. You would think as players we would hold on to that mentality and just think short to the baseball, hit line drives. No. It's not the case.
Why would you get big at a big ballpark? You would think it'd be just the opposite.
Yeah, but you feel like you have to try to do more. It's you look out there and you're just like, hell, am I ever? I got to really get this ball to get it out.
Yeah.
And I think guys started to tend to get a little big. I mean, you've heard it. If you go back, Victor Martinez talked about this ball, the ballpark at Comerica Park. Miguel Cabrera, they were complaining about
Juan Gonzalez talked
Juan
about
Gonzalez,
it.
He didn't sign. I think he turned down $190 million because the field was big. Now, I like the adjustments that they've made, but it does mess with the player's psyche. Should it? Absolutely not, but it does.
Okay, so this team has found a little bit better brand of baseball, something that we were used to before, cleaner brand of baseball,
yeah.
Okay? Looking at more pitches. Do you think they've calmed people's fears?
I don't know if they've calmed, but I feel like they are headed in that direction of calming them. Like, there's still a lot to be done. Like, still, I'm still concerned about the bullpen.
Yeah,
I'm not sold yet.
Kyle Finnegan's been pretty good.
He's been good, and that's been a great acquisition, but there's only one guy. You got to get a couple of guys, 3-4 guys going where those matchups late in ball games, you feel really good about it.
Yeah, there was a time where you and I were doing this podcast here from the Imagine Theater, and we were talking about how Detroit is the best team in baseball. And it wasn't just because of the victories.
Oh.
It was because of how they were playing more than anything else. The victories would tell you they're not the best team in baseball. Milwaukee, not Seattle, but the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, of course. They're all right there, okay? But nobody has more wins than the Brewers that we'll get to here in a moment. But now, with the way they're playing, I mean, do you still believe that they're the best team in baseball? Even though they don't have the most wins, you could still be the best team in baseball. Do you still think they're in that conversation?
I do. I think they're in that conversation, but it's hard to say that they're the best team in baseball. I think they're in the conversation, but like you said, Dodgers are one, I feel like, could be in the best team in baseball.
Why do we always bring up the Dodgers? And the Brewers are the first team to 70 wins. Why do we bring up the Dodgers and not the Brewers? The people talk more about the Cubs in the NL East than they do, or the NL Central than they do the team that's leading that division.
I have a reason, Shep, for me, it's a mindset. It's a look at this Dodger team and proof is in the pudding. They bought credibility.
It's their payroll. It's their big
payrolls,
names.
Payrolls, their big names. They've got it all, but they're the
they're the standard.
The end, they are the standard.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to beat that team. And it's going to be hell getting through the Dodgers.
I really respect what the Brewers have done.
I do, too.
I think it's really cool that they've got guys that not many people know who they are, right?
Young guys.
They lose Willie Adames. And they don't lose much. They add an Andrew Vaughn just in case. Reese Hoskins that gets hurt, he starts to play well. Christian Yelich has found his way. William Contreras is really good. I think it's a really cool story with what's going on in Milwaukee. And it's a team that is proving to people you don't have to spend a lot of money in order for you to be a division
team. Well, I love the idea of getting Yelich's back to being Yelich.
Yeah.
And I think that's what that team needed. He was lost for a few years there. We're thinking he came off of what, an MVP year, and then all of a sudden
big contract.
Yeah. And I said this before: when guys sign big deals, they put more pressure on themselves. They try to live up to the contract.
Mm-hmm.
Just go play the game. I think we saw that with Baez here the first few years. You sign $120 million deal, all of a sudden, oh, I've got to be the guy. Yeah. And you start trying to do way more than you're capable of doing. Just be the same guy.
Harper and Ohtani would probably be the opposite. But to your point, there are guys like that's part of Juan Soto's deal.
Yeah.
With the Mets probably this year. It's been a serious problem at the time we're talking right now. It's a team that has dropped 10 of its last 11 to drop 5.5 games back in the division. Philly's got a little bit more of a cushion, and people are starting to question the Mets now.
Well, and they should, because they're not playing good baseball. And their stars are not being stars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when teams win. Teams win when their stars are stars. And when those guys scuffle, it's hard to win baseball games.
So then what flies in maybe a little bit of controversy with that is that the Tigers don't have any stars except for Tarek Skubal.
They got stars in the making.
They got stars in the making?
I believe Riley Green's going to be a star.
Guy leads all of baseball in strikeouts. You think he's just going to be a star?
I this might sound crazy to me, Sean, but I'm not concerned about his strikeouts.
Wow.
He does so many other things on the field. He's an excellent defensive left fielder.
Yes, he is.
Coming from center field to left field, seamless transition.
Mm-hmm.
Gets the best jumps on the baseball, lays his body on the line. He makes plays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he pops one up. is it equivalent to striking out? Like it's an out. What does it matter?
Yeah, I guess that's the new philosophy. I'm having a hard time digesting it. I would say the two best left fielders in baseball all around, because Stephen Kwan's really good too. He's a slap hitter. He's a really good defensive player, as we all know, in Cleveland, and has won a couple of gold gloves, even though last year I think Riley Green should have won it. Riley Green and James Wood are number one and number two in strikeouts this year, 156 and 151. And it just doesn't seem to bother people. I don't know why that is.
Well, I was listening to an interview with Chipper Jones. I think he was on the show with A-Rod and Big Poppy and Derek Jeter. And he said he took it personal. Mm-hmm. It was like he wanted to be a tough out. Being a switch hitter is a little different again. You're not having to deal with that ball running away from you. Mm-hmm. That ball's always coming in. Your righty's on the mound, he's going to go lefty.
Yeah.
Left turns on the mound, he turns righty. I respect that statement, but what kind of hitter do you want to be? What kind of hitter do you see Riley Green?
Well, I think he can hit for average, but he's also got power too. So, I mean, I think he can be a 30 home run guy who hits, I mean, it depends on what you consider average, right? Who can hit 280, 290.
I do too, but when a guy has power, he hits 30, you said 30,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be some swings and misses in his swing. If you look at his swing right now, and trust me, I dissect this swing all the time.
I bet you do.
He gets big a lot.
Yeah.
And he's got this little bit of he's got a lengthy swing that's up a little bit, trying to create what everybody's doing, launching. And maybe that's not his mindset, but when you watch it, that's what it looks like.
I think I could accept the strikeouts a little bit better if you walked more. And he doesn't walk much.
Yeah, he's a free swinger.
And so therein lies, I think, a bit of an issue.
But that was one of the things they talked about, though. They wanted him to be a little bit more selective and take his chances, you know, when he gets in a better count, hitter's count. But this day and age, I don't feel like these pitchers are they're around the plate. They're winning the race to two strikes. They're getting ahead of these hitters. And now all of a sudden, they're expanding the strike zone and we're chasing.
I think we've got to figure out what's acceptable. So a couple years ago, Kyle Schwarber led all of baseball in strikeouts with 217, somewhere in that number.
200.
Something like that. But he also hit 47 bombs.
See, I'm taking that.
So you're taking that.
Oh,
right.
Absolutely.
Riley Green's got 27 bombs, 156 punch outs. I talked about this earlier in the week, and that was Dave Kingman, in my youth, was seeing as a freewheeling home run swing type of guy. I viewed him as an all or nothing guy. He either hit homers or he struck out. Okay.
Right.
He led baseball in homers twice. He led baseball in strikeouts three times. However, and this was a lot, in a 149 game season for him in 1982, he struck out a league high 156 times. Riley Green, through 115 games, has struck out 156 times. In fact, last year, there were 37 players in Major League Baseball who struck out 156 times or more. There's going to be over 30 who do it again this year.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear about past guys who couldn't do this, couldn't do that. It just seems like it doesn't really matter much to us.
It doesn't matter to the players this day and age. I think guys are tunneling their swings to have a launch angle.
Okay.
These guys are trying to get the ball in the air. If you go back and you talk to the Chipper Joneses of the world, would love to be able to just sit and talk hitting with a guy like Tony Gwynn.
Oh,
you know,
never struck out more than 40 times in a season.
But these guys understood what kind of hitters they wanted to be very early. Tony Gwynn could hit home runs.
Mm.
It was his choice.
Ichiro
can hit home runs. We watched him take batting practice.
Yeah.
Bombs.
Yeah.
When he wanted to.
Yeah.
But he wanted to be a 300 hitter. I think this day and age, guys are going to have to decide, are we going to go with what hitters over 100 years have talked about, down and through the baseball, line drives, hitting it through? Guys, are we going to continue to talk about launch angle? And as soon as this bat drops and comes in this slot, and you got this upswing, you're going to swing him in.
Why can't you do both?
You can't.
George Brett did both. I mean, he never struck out more than 90 times in a season.
Yeah, some big guys home are just special.
It's a bad comparison, you're saying?
It's horrible.
Okay.
One of the greatest hitters. You don't think for a second I want to be a 252 career hitter?
Yeah.
I wish I could do that and be consistent as those guys.
Yeah.
Some guys are just better.
Is baseball the only sport that this happens? Like in basketball, it used to be the mid-range jump guy, yeah, right? Everybody wants Richard Hamilton not too far along. Alex English back in the day. George Gervin back in the day. Those guys were money from 15 feet and in, if that's what you consider. I can't think of another sport where we accept this type of, I'll use the word, failure.
Well, because you fail 7 out of 10 times if you're great.
I know, but I'm talking about failure, which comes along with what used to be a little bit of embarrassment, okay? Failing 7 out of 10 is one thing. Striking out 3 out of 10 is another thing.
Yeah, no, it is. Okay? But I mean...
What other sport do we do that in?
No, none. But that's personal for me. Like, if I punch out or I pop it up, I don't know. It's just I'm out. My batting average is going down. Doesn't matter if I strike out or if I pop it up.
You can accept the strikeouts just like you would accept a ground ball to second or a weak pop up in the foul territory.
Yeah, I would much rather put the ball in play. All right? I would much rather put it in play. There's times where you go up there and you're not getting a pitch to hit. And if you miss that one, good luck. You're in trouble.
Okay. A friend of yours recently made history. Justin Verlander, in a start on Sunday for the Giants, lost 8-0, but did reach 3,500 career strikeouts. He is 10th all time. He will pass a number of big names coming up as well. Not just at 10, he will no doubt get to 9 and perhaps even 8 at some point this season, if not next season, if he chooses to play. But he did lose the game. He lost 8-0. He gave up 11 hits.
He's been losing.
And he gave up 6 runs, and he's 1-9 on the year.
If you'd have told me that, I...
Do you want him to retire? I do.
You do?
I do.
See, that's one of the toughest things for me, because I don't think anybody can tell a player when to retire. I think it's an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
He has been so good for so long that I don't believe he can tarnish his career.
Hmm.
But when you're putting up numbers like that, you think he can?
Well,
he's 1-9.
I think when you go 1-9 and you've got an ERA close to 6, I do think that hurts you. Yes, I think that it's hard for people. We all want to.
But it doesn't take away what you've done.
Oh, absolutely not. No. But tarnishing at the end, like everybody would love to do what Peyton Manning did. Yeah. Peyton Manning's last game, he retired, he won the Super Bowl. That's beautiful.
That is.
Right?
That's a storybook.
Who wouldn't want to do that? It feels like Justin Verlander's hanging on, and I don't like him to hang on. I don't expect him to be an ace, and he can obviously get swings and misses. He's shown that with the strikeouts, but he's not a guy who's going deep. He's going 5 innings.
Yeah, he has been.
He's
going 5
losing to Pittsburgh. He's losing to Washington. He's giving up big time runs to teams that aren't known for scoring big time runs. That concerns me.
Yeah, it is concerning me too. He's been very hittable.
Yes.
This season, I'll call it that. He's been very hittable. He is getting up there too in age. There's a lot of miles on that arm,
mm-hmm.
but he's still sitting mid-90s. He's got a little bit more movement.
But a friend of mine once told me this in the Tigers booth. He said, Shep, I don't care if I see 100. I can hit 100. There has to be movement. You have to be able to mix it up.
Yeah.
He's not mixing it up. In fairness to Justin Verlander, 3 away from Walter Johnson. Could he pass Gaylord Perry for number 8 all time in strikeouts? Probably not. No one's really – I mean, Max Scherzer's right after him. Yeah. I think he'll get to 3,500. But then from a guy who's still playing – Clayton Kershaw, barely over 3,000. It shows you how challenging it is to get to that elite pitcher's number.
Well, it also tells you how good Justin Verlander has been. When you look at that, you think about 3,500?
Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
Well,
every time I play left field behind him, I can tell you right now, I thought he was going to throw a no-hitter. That's what it felt like.
Mm.
Now, on this day, if I'm sure the guys in the outfield right now thinking, all right, well... Get my running shoes on.
Yeah, I'm gonna be ready. Yeah,
you just never know. I just think,
I think the 20 years is
time.
Pretty impressive too for him to play as long as he has. You know,
but I don't know if you can, I don't know if I'm ready to say he should retire yet.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's easy for fans and talk show hosts and podcast hosters to sit there and go, oh, he should retire. It's really up to the individual. I just, when you see a guy on his downward spiral,
yeah,
the way he has been this year, I, for his, the sake of his legacy, I would like to see it. It also puts into perspective just how dominant Nolan Ryan was.
Oh.
So think about this. Justin Verlander is 3,503. Nolan Ryan, 5,714. 5714. That's how dominant Nolan Ryan truly was.
Oh, and I got a chance to meet Nolan Ryan and talk to him, and you just, you talk about a specimen. I
mean, my God.
He was massive.
He was incredible.
He really was, and he was a bulldog out there. And again, it was kind of like that whole Verlander mindset, like, give him the ball, mm-hmm. It felt good.
And that's what I really respected and appreciate about Verlander. He was as old school a player in modern day baseball as you could find. And to see him struggle through five innings against some bad teams has made me go, man, I wish people who are watching him for the, you know, first or second time or never get a chance to see him back earlier in his career, even if it wasn't Detroit, even if it was just Houston, the dominance that he had, I wish they could see that part of it.
I do too. And here's my storybook ending for Justin.
Oh boy, here we go.
I know that's what you're thinking, but I'm going to tell you about it because I want you to know about this. The storybook ending. Verlander signs back with the Tigers on a farewell tour. Come back home. That's just, I think that would
And then they win the World Series.
Well, I would, I mean, we hope they would.
Yeah, it's not Hollywood, though. I just don't know.
I can't write that script down?
Yeah, you can't write
that script. I mean, I tried, right?
There are people, look, dude, there are people who wanted him at the trade deadline.
Okay? I did, too.
And I was like, are you kidding me?
No.
Do you want to get better? That's all I'm asking you.
He's better than some of the guys you got now.
Who?
Well, you don't have Reese Olson. He's on the shelf.
Okay. So that's a moot point. Who's he better than?
He's better than Charlie Morton.
Charlie Morton just punched out 10 the other day.
And he just, he gave up 6.
Oh, the same number as Verlander gave up, to Miami the other day, yeah. I don't.
Sean, get your dad.
I don't think he's better than what they have, unfortunately. And it's really too bad because I would, just a few years ago, I probably would have taken it.
In a playoff game? I don't know.
I don't think it matters.
It does. The intensity of the game is different. It's.
But he's not good enough right now, Simo. You leave. You're with your heart instead of your head.
Is that what I'm doing?
Yes.
No.
Separate the emotion.
He's 1-8. Okay, he's having a rough season.
Oh, you think?
But that doesn't mean he can't month or he turn it around. Okay. He's been that good.
So here's what I would ask you.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's what I'm going to ask you.
Well, I'm ready.
I want you to close your eyes, okay?
Okay.
Close your eyes, and I'm going to read the numbers, and then you tell me that's who you want. Ready?
Yeah.
1-9 in 20 starts. You got that? One and nine in 20 starts. You're the general manager, and you've got to tell the media and the fan base this. We pick up a guy, 4.5 ERA, and a WHIP of 1.5.
Yeah.
Which is okay.
when you put it like that.
That's your guy. You've got a strikeout per nine of 7. And a walk per nine of 3, close to 3.5.
Yeah. Those numbers are not gonna cut.
Those are alarming.
They are.
Right. That's
But that doesn't mean that that doesn't mean I still don't want him.
You want him because you used to play behind him when he was in the prime of his career. Yeah. And I don't blame you for that.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
But that's
him.
Like me saying, I want Clint Eastwood to return to a fistful of dollars. That's not going to happen. He's in his 90s. That just doesn't work that way. So I'm sorry. That's the hard part about
that
it.
That is
right?
Hard for me, man. And it's hard for me to watch him struggle because you just, I'm reminded of his dominance, man. Every time I think back or go back to the days where he was just the fiercest competitor, one of the fiercest competitors I've ever played
and
with.
And I'm sure he's still like that.
There's no question. The mindset doesn't change.
Yeah, he's a fierce competitor.
He's just not.
His stuff just isn't there like it used to be. And I just want, it's selfish of me. I want to remember him a certain way, okay? And now, for me, the last couple of years, it's made me go, I want you to retire. Nobody wanted to see Willie Mays as a Met. They wanted to remember him as the San Francisco Giant, how good he was and how dominant he was. Nobody wanted to see Mickey Mantle at the end of his career the way he played, okay? So, again, I'm not putting him in that tier, but you could argue he's the greatest Tigers pitcher of all time, and it's hard. it helps that he's on the West Coast where we don't see
these
things.
Well, we don't see him, yeah.
But if you are following it, you are like recognizing he has not been good. I mean, look at his game log. He's not going past five innings, and he was an absolute horse.
Yeah, always wanted the ball.
Absolute assassin. He was a tough son of a bitch,
yes.
And he still is, but he just doesn't have the gas to go through.
No, he doesn't have it. But you win that one because those numbers tell me that maybe my storybook ending is not the best ending for Justin.
Well, look, it would be a storybook ending.
It would be a story.
And I would
and I think fans here, they would go crazy. They would love to have him back here. They would put some butts in the seats.
Without a doubt.
Because he still is must-see TV. The back of that number 35 in Verlander. You want to see him.
I would have liked to have seen it on the wall. I would have loved to have seen his wind-up in a statue out at Comerica Park. I mean, they just unveiled Tom Brady's statue in New England. I would have loved to have seen something like that, which harkens back to this. This is totally off subject. Why has it taken the Tigers so long to unveil Miguel Cabrera? Why wouldn't you begin work on that statue?
Yeah,
Tom Brady can do it within the first few years.
Yeah,
I know Cabrera's only been gone for a couple, but should that not be done pretty soon?
Yeah, like give you the flowers now. I mean, why wait so long? Get it done now. He deserves it. He's been one of the greatest Tigers of all time.
Yeah.
And one of the greatest players.
If I'm the Tigers, here's what I'm doing. I am ordering whoever makes those statues,
yeah.
The beautiful statues that are out there.
They
are really cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just out there the other day.
I don't know where they're going. I don't know where they're going to fit them.
I have
the other
no idea
ones.
Where they're going to put them.
But you've got to find room. I would be at least having blueprints of the Cabrera, the Verlander, but even before that, the Trammell and Whitaker should have been there by now. Okay, so for them to be, I don't care if they're sitting back to back like they did on a Tigers program in 1983 or 84 or whatever.
That's your image too, huh?
It's one of them. But the flipping and Trammell going over the bag or Lou touching the bag and turning to throw to second first, those are the images people have. That needs to be done while the two men are still living.
Well, think about this. Tom Brady's was outside the stadium.
There you go. I like this.
This could be something where they've got the Willie Horton's, K-Line's inside.
Yes.
And now maybe on the outside coming in.
Or in the concourse where they have Ernie Harwell.
Yeah, so maybe
that
would be something that they might think about and go, we can get this done quicker.
I like that
sooner
a lot.
Rather than later, and that's where you can put them.
You and I have been to Pittsburgh. We think it's one of the better ballparks in all of Major League Baseball. They honor a lot of their people outside the stadium. Okay.
Which I think
Minnesota does all their statues outside the stadium.
Yeah.
From Tom Kelly to Kirby Puckett, all those guys.
Walking up to the mirror, we're walking from the hotel.
Yeah.
And you see all these cool things. I think that's a great idea. Don't you think?
Does it go beyond those three in your mind? Is there anybody we're missing?
Oh.
I can only think
Lance
of
Parrish.
I love close. Him, and we appreciate him being on. But I would say no. There's only one image I would want made into a statue, and where both men are Tigers legends, and it's in 1968 when Mickey Lolich jumps into Bill Freehan's
arms. Oh yeah!
After winning Game 7 against the Cardinals and Bob Gibson, I might add, to win that game. And knowing that Mickey Lolich was the MVP, he won three of the four games, all of them complete games, the last game on hardly any rest. And considering how good Bill Freehan was as an 11-time Gold Glover, that image right there, I could see being made into a statue without necessarily naming one particular individual. Does that make sense?
No, it makes all the sense to me. Like, because that image there will never leave your head either. Like, that's one of those moments that are like, again, I start the priceless moment. 1968, they win the World Series, and that thought right there, that whole image there,
yeah,
it tells the Tiger story.
It does, and it tells the history of the franchise, in one moment like that, and the glee that we had and the pride that we carried with it. I don't think the Tigers do a really good job in that regard. I think they've got to be better at that. They have to be do a better job of honoring their greats. They don't have to have statues. That's not what it's about. Plaques are fine. That's what needs to be done. There has to be a commitment from the organization to the men who wore that uniform so well, with so much pride and so much class. And they've done it with great players.
Yes.
But they haven't rewarded the players who I thought were great Tigers. Okay? They don't have to be great major leaguers, but they were great. Lance Parrish, you bring up, is a really good example. Those are the statues I would like to see.
Right.
Okay? Lou Whitaker should be in the Hall of Fame. We all know that.
Right.
All right? He's not. It's a cardinal baseball sin. Does it take him getting into Cooperstown for them to make a statue of the greatest double play combination in the history of the sport?
Right. And I wonder if that's even, have they even contemplated? Has they even thought about
this? I don't think they have.
And you, that's honestly, the times we were there, that's been one of your biggest gripes with his organization.
Oh, it's been one of my biggest bitches forever.
No, it has. And I've heard
without
it.
A doubt. I know people don't like it. I know people in the organization don't like it. That's okay. I don't care. I know what should be done. I know what's right for this franchise in that sense. That should be done.
Yeah, like, and I think you can the fans would appreciate it.
Go ahead and put all the fancy seats behind home plate. Who gives a rat's ass?
Right.
I'm talking about the men who have made us all Tigers fans.
Yeah.
Those people should be taken care of first, but it's all about the money. How much money are we going to make with people back there and so on and so forth? And it doesn't look good with A, green seats, and B, when it's not full. But you know what does look good? When you come back from camera break or commercial break with a camera and you're getting a shot of guys walking in and seeing the Trammell and Whitaker statue and things of that nature. You know what I'm saying?
That's a great moment there, walking in there, seeing like the Trammell and Lou.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I am with you on that. And again, that's something we obviously we have our opinion about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be on the Tigers. To execute it, make it happen.
And it was a pretty strong opinion on my part. I know, very strong.
I know some people
don't like it.
Freaking passionate about
that
shit.
And that's okay. But I'm gonna stay. I'm gonna die on that hill.
You are.
All right. I truly believe that because I think it's important. And the team is that important to the city and really the state of Michigan. There was some other history made over the weekend, and that was Jen Powell being a home plate umpire, first female umpire in the history of the sport to call balls and strikes. How do you feel about that at the major league level?
The game evolving, obviously. I'm not really sure how to feel yet because I think about being in the trenches and being in that batter's box. And
she brings you up on a bad strike.
That's what I'm saying. And so I have to now think about this. Okay.
I mean, what are some of those conversations?
Am I going to cuss her out? Am I going to say some choice words that I would use?
Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you treat her like anybody else?
I don't, because you respect the ladies, yeah?
Okay.
So I probably wouldn't, much as I would want to.
Do you think NBA players cuss out any of the female referees? Do you think any of the NFL players cut out any of the female officials?
I don't know. I haven't heard it.
Okay.
Because, you know, the mics are always hot. We think that you would hear, but I'm sure they do. I don't know if I could. I don't know yet.
She was at a 90% success rate.
That's not good, is it?
Which, you know, some people think it has to be much higher than that.
I would like for it to be because those calls, they
matter.
They change the game.
Yeah.
Changing that bat for a hitter. 2-1 is better. Like a 2-0 count is better than a freaking 0-2 count. It just is.
How much would you have to control yourself knowing that it's a female voice ringing you up rather than a male voice? Why should that truly matter, just besides the obvious what you just said?
I don't know if that would bother me or not. I don't know. I would love to talk to the guys our first game to see how like that sense me. Like when she's rung up a few guys, it's like, I wonder what was going through their mind. Because if she rings me up on some bullshit, I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, you're going
to
get after
it. I'm probably, it'd be tough to get into an argument and fight with a woman, though.
Well, the Braves and Marlins had good things to say about it. But
yeah.
Then it makes me wonder, is that because it's PC?
Yeah.
Or is it because they truly felt she did a really good job?
I'd like to get on the plane ride, back on the bus, going to the hotel.
Have a drink or two.
Have a drink or two and hear the real conversation about.
Yeah, you know me. I don't care how old a person is.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's male or female. I don't care color. As long as they do the job well, that's what matters first and foremost. They have to uphold. And, you know, look, Angel Hernandez was terrible. And he was terrible for a long, long time.
He's got me.
Why was he in that position? If she's in the position strictly because she's a female, that's a problem. Right. If she's in the position because she's good enough and stays there because she's good enough, hats off to her. I don't think it should matter.
Well, it shouldn't matter if she's good at a job.
Right.
But, I mean, this is, you think about it, though, champ. We're just making sure, like, that we're integrating all the, like, we're allowing women to be a part of our game, which, yeah. honestly, I do believe for other women, that's inspiring. I mean, yeah, it's inspiring, like, for them to.
Sure. Absolutely.
Think that they, you know, to believe and see it done before.
Yeah, they shouldn't be held back.
No, they shouldn't be held back. But I just don't know if I would be able to. I have to just respect her and handle my, you know, handle my emotions when I'm under like the most pressure that I've been under.
Well, then I think that's a dangerous line, because then other male umpires may toss you sooner than they actually would next time you get in their grill.
Oh, they do anyway.
About a call, yeah.
They're very sensitive.
Yeah.
They don't like you looking back and saying shit to them.
I would say baseball umpires might be the most sensitive.
They are.
And NHL referees the least sensitive. Because every time you look at an NHL game, that coach is every other word is F at a referee. And the referee's like, all right, have a great Christmas.
Who cares?
Yeah, they really don't care.
That would be, yeah, this is going to be interesting how this, and if it evolves into having more, you know, women umpiring games. We'll wait and see. But
I'm interested to get some thoughts from you and your friends on this stuff as it evolves. Not now, but as it evolves, and as long as they're doing the job, but how you're going to react and how you're going to handle
things. I think guys, mama boys, I think a lot of us are mama boys. I think a lot of guys are going to be a lot more respectful.
Well, then hopefully that carries over into when they're being respectful to the men who wear Major League Baseball blue. See, and that's
wrong.
Okay,
I know.
Well, then the hypocrisy.
I get it.
Okay, then
I get
you,
it.
You better expect to have being tossed early then. Okay, yeah. That's all I'm saying.
You're right.
You got to treat them all the same. It shouldn't. If it doesn't matter on the type of sex that the person is, if it doesn't matter them calling balls and strikes, then it shouldn't matter with you talking to them about how they are.
Yeah, you're right.
Or what they've done.
It just changes it. Yeah. That's the world we live in, too.
It could be a scary situation in baseball. Hey, speaking of scary, and, you know, we're sponsored by Imagine Theater and the Palladium here in Birmingham, which is where we broadcast our podcast every week. Let's pick the scariest movies or the best horror flick of what? You're not a scary
movie? No,
not
really,
movie.
But you're killing me with, I mean, you're talking to the guy
who's
not really
like?
A movie. I watch sports, reality TV.
Reality TV is really scary.
It's all right. Real life.
So it's real life. No, it's all made up,
it's
all fake.
I know.
Even though they call it reality TV. All right, let's get the thoughts. I'll give you a second to just think about it for a minute. Sean and Andrew are a producer and director here today. Let's get their thoughts. What's the best scary movie or horror flick of all time? Sean and Andrew, let us know. What do you guys think?
What do you got?
Go ahead. Andrew?
I'll say for me, probably Barbarian.
Barbarian?
Just because it takes place in like Royal Oak, and it's about like an Airbnb sort of thing, situation.
Right. I never heard of that one.
So I never heard of that one. You feel like that's close
it's
to being real.
Close to home sort of scenario. So like it's sort of terrifying. Okay.
So Barbarian.
We might have to. You're going to check it out?
Actually, I will check it out. I'll watch the trailer.
Okay.
I'm not going to take it. I'm not just going to automatically watch it.
I can tell you right now, you're not going to like that.
Okay. Movie. All right. So, all right, Sean, what do you find the best scary or horror movie out there?
The best, I mean, like The Exorcist, I feel like has to be in the conversation of like the best of all time. All
right.
There's a lot of classics. I think for me, the scariest movie I've ever seen is probably The Strangers, just because it's so realistic and it's based on true events, and it's like a home invasion type thing where like everything that takes place is it's very real.
Yeah, you could see it happening.
You can see it happening. That's a good one too. So. Yeah.
That movie scared me.
You know what? Yeah. You took two of mine. I said the same thing. So The Strangers is... It bothered me.
Did it?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's freaky.
So that's one I need to
and
watch
the
as well.
The Strangers 2 as well. Okay.
I haven't watched either one of those.
Okay. I would recommend it. I really would. I would recommend it. Sean brought up The Exorcist, the original Exorcist.
Yes.
Absolutely. That freaks you out. And the last one that I have, this is kind of odd, but it's called The Nun. It is scary. Andrew's nodding his head right away going, yeah, I can get it. Sean is too. That movie bothered me as well. So those, you know, you can go back to Amityville Horror if you wanted to. That was a spooky movie too. But The Strangers, The Exorcist, and The Nun for me left me unsettled. Okay, I was squirming in my seat like, this is really hitting deep.
Did you like Friday the 13th? Was that really scary to you guys or no?
I think there are moments in those movies where I jump, you know, but it doesn't keep me on the edge where I'm scared.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so horror movies and scary movies might be two different categories. The Strangers is scary.
I'm going to watch it.
Okay, The Exorcist is scary.
The
Nun is scary. You'll like all those. So do you have one?
I don't.
You don't?
No. I don't really like horror. I like comedy. I don't want to be scared. That's like riding roller coaster. I don't have that. I don't have that adrenaline to be kicking scared.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I want comedy. I want to laugh. I want to keep things light and enjoy my life. Not fucking being scared, dude. Sorry.
Well, I would recommend it. I would strongly recommend you watch Strangers, okay. But watch it with everybody close to you. Because you'll get spooked out a little bit.
I will.
Trust me when I tell you that.
I will. I'll watch
it. We hope we didn't spook you at all. We want you to come back. Follow us on all our social media channels. Next week, we're going to have Howard Johnson on, the former Tiger and a two-time World Series champ with the Tigers in 84 and the Mets in 86. He will join the next episode of Catching Up with Simo and Shep. We hope you can join us as well. Thanks for watching.